This is Jan Menning from the Oral History Group, Arundel Museum. The date is Tuesday, the 17th of May, and the time is 1:30. And the interview is located at St Philip's Catholic Primary School. And I'm interviewing Mrs Lucy Horne, spelled H-O-R-N-E, for the Life During the Pandemic project. Lucy, could you tell me a little bit about yourself and your role as head teacher?
My name is Lucy Horne. I'm the head teacher of St Philip's Primary School in Arundel. I've been in role for 8 years, and we are a 200 place school, so 30 children each class.
Could we start by asking you, could you tell me a little bit about the school before the pandemic?
Yep, it's a very busy school. So although we only have 200 children, we have a lot of families and lots going on in the school day. We do lots of activities with the town, lots of activities outside of school, and then lots of work within the school day. So we very much are a school where we work the children hard in their classroom, but then also reward them with lots of activities outside of school. We had a very robust curriculum with lots of challenge going on and lots of wider curriculum stuff going on as well.
Okay. What was your first reaction when you heard about the pandemic, whether it was on the news or...?
At first I started to think, oh gosh, that's quite close, and I knew that it would come to us eventually. I had no idea how big it would be, and originally my thoughts were that they weren't going to close schools, that schools wouldn't close for any reason at all. Little did we know.
And how did you initially think it would affect the running of the school once you heard the schools were going to be closed?
I thought that we would carry on having teaching staff in school. We weren't quite sure how many families would want to come and use the space once the schools had closed. And we were in the same boat as everybody else, really, because we only know the information as soon as the DfE announces it on the television as to whether we're going to close. So we were sitting on the edge of our sofas as well in our homes, watching, listening out for the 8 o'clock briefing, and finding out whether the Prime Minister was going to close the school or not. And so we figured that we would just carry on as normal and deal with the children that were coming into school.
And how much guidance did you have when you realised that this was a long-term situation? Did you get guidance from the government?
The government did give us some guidance, but it was always behind the curve. It was always behind the Prime Minister's briefing, and a lot of things that he announced on the television, we wouldn't get that guidance through till the following day or the day after. So we were very much working in the dark. Not a lot from the local authority, some information from the Department for Education, but we relied on our local academy schools, who had people who were bringing out policies and risk assessments and guidance. So we worked very closely with other schools that were part of an academy chain and had larger amounts of staff who could get those things up and running very quickly. Mm. But we were all waiting for any DfE guidance that came through. Quite often it would be at midnight that it came through, and trying to quickly scan through, ready for the next day and implementations, and keeping parents abreast of what was going on as well.
Mm-hmm. And what was it when you had to close, Michelle? What was the reaction of staff?
So staff were initially concerned. Obviously, you know, we were hearing about a virus that was, you know, killing people in effect, and that it was, we didn't know how far spread it was going to be. So they were concerned about coming into school and catching it, taking it home to their families. But teachers are very resigned to doing things that the local authority tell them to, or the government tells them to do. And so they quickly stepped up to the mark and realised that actually we've got to come in. Teachers were less concerned than our support staff. Support staff were a bit more wary, but teachers were very much of an ilk that we're being paid and we're expected to come in, so we will.
Okay. And the children and the parents, what was their reaction when there was an announcement that you would have to close?
So parents were anxious at first and were all emailing in to try and get their children a place for coming into school. Mm-hmm. Some families were very happy to keep their children at home, and they knew that was the safest place for them to be. other families who didn't know whether they'd be off work and whether they were able to have the children at home were all emailing in saying, can I book my children in for coming into school? We then read through the guidance and realised it was just for key workers or for vulnerable children. So we issued more guidance to parents to say it will only be if you have a letter from the NHS to say that you're an NHS worker. And in the initial lockdown, it was only a small proportion of children came. I think probably about 12 children came for the first lockdown. And the rest of the families, because the weather was nice and people were off and nobody knew what was happening, it was sort of a suspension of time, really, where it was just an extended summer holiday. So lots of our families kept their children at home. Then as the time went on, they started to become a bit more concerned and frustrated that they couldn't come into school, or that how long was it going to be, and homeschooling sort of took the shine of this homeschooling started to be a little bit tarnished, and children were getting restless as well. So parents were okay at first, but then started to get a little bit anxious towards the end of the first lockdown.
Mm. And what was the experience, and what sort of timetable did you run for those students, that the 12, which presumably were from mixed age groups?
Yes.
During the day, well, how did that
so
work?
So we split them into two groups. We had Key Stage 1 and Key Stage 2. We had only two teachers on a rota. So we'd have two teachers in, the rest of the teachers would be at home doing homeschooling. And that went on a rota for the first lockdown. And we would start off the day with a joint PE session because we could spread them all out in the hall. So we all did the Joe Wicks, which was the thing of the time. So we were all in the hall doing the Joe Wicks to start the day. Then they would go off into their classes and do, sometimes they would do the homeschooling the other children were doing, which was the online stuff that the government brought out. Other times they'd be doing individual plans or catching up, because of course they were all different ages, catching up from things that they needed to do in their classrooms. And then at lunchtime, they'd all come into the lunch hall together and have their lunch, and all hot lunches were provided for all children, despite whether they were eligible for it or not. And they'd have a joint playtime, and then back into the afternoon sessions in their separate ones as well. So that was for the first lockdown, when there were only 12 children who came in. The second lockdown, we had a lot more children. And because we couldn't mix the year groups, each teacher had to come in and have a group of children, whether that was 10 children or 20 children or 5 children. We had to have a class teacher in each of the classes because they couldn't mix bubbles because there were too many of them. And then teachers did a live session in the morning and then did remote teaching for the rest of the day. And the children in the classroom would do the same work that was going on in the at home as well. So it's kind of more aligned for the second lockdown.
And the homeschooling, what extra work was incurred by staff on the homeschooling, and what extra resources were you up and ready sort of for this distance learning? Mm.
So for the first lockdown we weren't, because we didn't have any preparation for that, and we sent home packs and we sent home lots of ideas and suggestions, things you might want to do as a, you know, learn new skills and all those sorts of things. So we put lots and lots of things on the website. We kept a lot of contact with parents so that they had ideas and suggestions for activities they could do. In the second lockdown, it was a bit more tricky. We were better prepared for it, but it was a bit more tricky in terms of each class had a group of children in their classroom, but also tried to manage those children at home. So the only way the children could communicate was through email. So teachers were trying to teach a classroom of children and man emails and answer all of those questions, plus run live sessions on the computer with all the technology of, you know, you're on mute, you need to come off mute now, and can you stop shouting, can you turn the sound off in the background, and all those sorts of things. And one of the teachers said it was a bit like whack-a-mole, where you've got so many children all over the screen sort of trying to speak and you're trying to put them all on mute. So it was challenging, and I think the teachers found it a challenging time. All of the days sort of merged in, so even weekends teachers were still talking to students by email and phone calls and all those sorts of things, because it was just a strange time of what was going on. So I was in every day through both of the lockdowns. So I was the consistent safeguarding lead and managing it all. For the first one, teachers only came in on a rota, but the second one they were all in and tried to manage home and in-class learning. So it was tricky.
Did the students all have computer capability, was that an issue for you as a school?
Yes, in the first one we didn't have that set up. By the second lockdown, all of our children had access to a computer, so we made sure that we loaned out all of our laptops that we'd got in school, and I spoke to families once or twice a week to check in. They would email, I was manning the emails from the main office, and we would organise for laptops to be sent out to them, so every family had some laptops. I think we had two laptops given to us from the Department for Education that came through the funding that they were doing for schools. And also because we had a computer-based system to do all of our learning, we were able to manage it so that every child accessed that platform. So we were able to see whether they were on or not. Mm-hmm. And those families that weren't engaging, we were ringing and talking them through it to make sure that they could get onto those mm-hmm. platforms and do the learning.
And would you say that the children coped with home learning?
For some, yes. For others, no. I think it depends on the child. I think it depends on the family circumstance. So for some children, the older children particularly, they coped well with it because they're more used to using the computer and they're more independently suited to learning. For the younger children, some of them found it challenging. And I think for parents who were working, they found it challenging. For some children who are reluctant to work anyway, doing that method of learning was difficult. But certainly the older classes, years four, five and six, were better than the younger ones, I think. Probably three were okay as well. But years 2, 1 and reception, they did find it really tricky.
And was it possible to help the families that were struggling, or could you do that?
Mm. So there were a couple of families that really, really couldn't cope with homeschooling, and in terms of mental health, there were lots of times where there was one or two families that really, really couldn't cope, and in the end we had those children in, so it was just easier for them to come into school and manage those children in school. I did make it very clear that we were only open for those families that were vulnerable or NHS, and that the more children we had in school, the longer it was going to go on for, so we couldn't stop the virus if we were all mixing all the time. But we did tailor it. So some families needed support just for a day or two a week because they were working. Other families needed it full time. Some families weren't eligible, but we still allowed them in. So really it was communication through phone calls and conversations regularly with families, which meant that we made it bespoke to each individual family.
Mm. Can I then take you forward to when you first came out of lockdown and the students were able to come back to school for the first day? Mm. What was the atmosphere in the school? At the gates. And
I did think, looking back, that perhaps we should have made more of it. You know, I'd have liked to have done some balloons and some banners and things. But actually, because we're a school and because we were trying to sort of make it feel like they're coming back, they've been learning at home and they were still continuing that learning coming in, we kind of made it quite low-key. We had lots of plans going out beforehand in terms of making sure children came in the right routes, and we planned all sorts of staggered starts and finishes to make sure that children were individually. Parents were very grateful, very pleased to have the children back, and I think the children were pleased to be back. And although children at the beginning were very pleased to have time off, by the end of it they were desperate to be back into the routine of learning and being with their friends.
Were there some that were a bit apprehensive?
In the next following few months, we've had more pastoral support needed for children, some of their mental health in terms of resilience and you know, sort of not wanting to come into school, wanting to be at home, has been tricky. And I think for families, they found it quite hard in some cases. But I think we have worked hard on that over the last sort of year, and now we're back to a position where children are much happier and we've put lots of support in, so they're able to cope with the demands of being back in a classroom again.
And you mentioned just earlier on that what adjustments did you have to make for the daily routine of the students when they first came back?
So we had to have each year group in a separate bubble, which is difficult in a one-form entry, where you can't have any group of 30 children mixing with another group of 30. So we did have assemblies because we felt that, that was missing, and that's kind of our coming together, especially in a Catholic faith school, where we do worship together. So we had one year group at the front of the hall and one year group at the back of the hall, all the windows open. We had staggered starts and finishes so that each year group were coming down together but not with another year group. We had staggered lunch times and playtime, so no children were allowed to be on the same table with another year group. So there were lots of structures and routines that meant that children were avoiding each other. I spent a lot of my time marshalling children from one place to another so that they weren't meeting on the stairs when they were going out to break and this group coming into lunch. So it took a lot of admin time and a lot of adult support time to manage all of that, and it's not sustainable because then your workload that you're supposed to be getting on with is impacted because you're marshalling children and making sure all of those things are in place, mm-hmm. and rewriting risk assessments and making sure that, you know, the cleaning routines were really tricky. So teachers were having to do lots of cleaning routines, LSAs, office staff wiping handles. You know, it was a big impact on teaching time and work time. And a lot of the curriculum was kind of put to one side because so much time was spent washing hands and cleaning things. So it's a big challenge.
Since returning, have you had any access to the natural tutor program, national tutor program?
We've had some funding. The funding isn't a huge amount. It's for pupil premium children, so children who are eligible for pupil premium, so disadvantaged children, which we only have 10% of our children who are pupil premium. And the government only gave you 60% of the funding, so schools had to top up the other 40%. So we actually didn't go down the route of employing tutors because our budget didn't allow for that to happen. So we used our funding to extend staff hours here so they could do group work before school, after school, during lunch times. So we used our funding slightly different because the £18 that they suggested for tutoring for a child didn't touch the sides really, and plus we'd had to find 40% of the funding.
What were your thoughts about the long-term effect of the pupils of the pandemic? Now we're sort of 2 years down the line, I suppose.
So the long-term effects on the children, I think, like I mentioned before, in terms of their well-being, a lot of them had to adjust. A lot of our younger children had to get used to being around other children and having those social interactions retaught. Reception class and year one miss a lot of their integral terms where they develop those friendships and their understanding of sharing and taking turns and how to be around one another. So when they came back to their new year group, teachers who are used to a year one group, for instance, were having to do things that they would have done in reception. So the year one teachers were having to adjust their learning to a year younger to teach those children. So we had a lot of friendship issues and fallouts and children who weren't ready to start the learning for that year group. So in year four, for instance, the beginning of their term or the beginning of their year, they spent the whole term getting used to presenting work in a set layout and doing it in time and building up their resilience in terms of getting the work done that they needed to, because they'd missed such chunks in year three, which is the transition year, which gets them ready to go into year four to catch up with the work. So a lot of work was done in terms of upskilling children because of areas that they'd missed, whether that's social or academic. So the impact on those children, and of course that then leads on to their well-being, because they're not happy in school because they're either finding it challenging or they're having fallouts. So it was quite a big impact on the children in terms of them missing those chunks of time, because whilst their academic perhaps hadn't fallen back so much in Key Stage 2, their maturity needed developing.
And your staff, what were the long-term effects you think on staff?
I think they were anxious, and I think anxiety makes you exhausted. So they were a little bit tetchy. Everybody was very good. Everybody was very good at stepping up. In the second lockdown, everybody was in. And it was a little bit divisive in terms of some staff said they weren't going to come in because they didn't feel safe. So there was that kind of animosity, which we never have in our staffing usually. But everybody was very good and stepped up. I think then once the lockdowns had finished and people came back into school, COVID was still around. So our staff were hit quite hard with catching COVID. So some of our staff have had it two or three times. And when you've only got 37 staff in total, when you've got 10, 11, 12 people out at a time, it has a huge impact on what's going on in school. And at one point we had 25% of our staff out, including three class teachers and me as head, and our Senko and everybody else. So it's maintaining that and everybody then having to step up and cover those people who are not not available. And I think that's exhausting, that's tiring, and having to adjust all the time when you're not feeling 100% yourself and feeling anxious. So I think it did take its toll. I think recently it's calmed down since probably February time, and our staffing has plateaued a little bit more, and that makes life a lot easier. But it certainly did have its challenges in terms of staff welfare and exhaustion.
And the testing, did you have to operate a testing system with the students and the staff?
No, in primary we don't have to do testing, but for staff, everybody was testing twice a week. So the issue then, parents were getting disgruntled because we were testing twice a week, which we were supposed to do. Teachers were being flagged up as having COVID, so then we'd send a message to parents to say the teachers got COVID. So then families would test their children, and then we had hordes of children not in school because they were all testing and coming out positive. So many of our families were saying, well, stop testing. Why are you testing? Because if you don't test, you won't have all these children off and you won't have teachers off. But actually, we were only testing really for the children if they've got symptoms. So it was kind of again, we don't really have a fallout with any of our parents or anything else, but it does stretch those friendships and those relationships.
So you're an experienced teacher and head teacher. In your viewpoint, where would you put this pandemic in your educational experience?
I'd say this is the hardest thing that we've had to go through. And I wouldn't say that the pandemic itself was, the lockdowns themselves was the hardest part. I'd say managing, coming back, and the sickness and the illness and the anxiety has been the hardest thing to manage. Because with the best will in the world, if you've got 25% of staff out, it's really difficult to cover all of those people, and there's no supply teachers around because everybody's in the same boat. So we're all covering each other. I think if you speak to any head teacher, they've said that they've covered more classes in this last sort of, 2 years than they have done for the entire time of being in headship. But also having that time all the time to do the staggered start. So it takes you an hour to get the children in, an hour at the end of the day rather than 5-10 minutes where they all come in together, and an hour and a half at lunchtime when you're managing all of those things, and then also dealing with the fallout with parents who are anxious about their children. So I think in terms of workload and stress, this is the biggest aspect. We also had we were a breakout school in November where we had 25% of staff off. We still kept going. We didn't send any children home. Then on the Monday, just as everybody was coming back after their 10 days, we had Ofsted, which was another challenge in terms of, not only is the accountability of all of those things going on, but also alongside that, you've got to keep up your standards and make sure that your safeguarding is in place and that your curriculum is in place and that you've updated all of your plans for the creative, all of those sorts of things that sort of just go on alongside that you're expected to do. So I think if you spoke to anybody in a head teacher or a senior leadership role, it has been really tough in terms of just managing, keeping everything going. And it's the staffing that's been the hardest part of it.
And is there anything that that's had to sort of be put aside in a sense from a curriculum point of view? Are there things that you would normally would do and you couldn't do in the last 3 years?
We had we've kept our curriculum going. So all through the lockdown, we made sure that we kept teaching maths and English and wider curriculum in the afternoon. When we had the lockdowns and then when we came back and we were still in our bubbles, we couldn't do events, so we couldn't go to sporting events, we couldn't do masses up at the cathedral, we couldn't do assemblies, we couldn't do nativity and all the lovely things that parents want to come and see. And again, that and sports day. And again, that caused some animosity with some parents who were saying, our children have been in school for 2 years. They started in reception in 2019 or 2020, and actually now you're saying in December 2021 we still can't come to a nativity, so our children have been in school for 2 years and we've not been to anything. And it's having those conversations with parents and managing that expectation whilst also keeping the safety of the children and staff. And at that time, when the nativities were going on, we had got 25% of staff out, and I think we had 82 children who'd got COVID, so it wasn't suitable to bring children and parents in to watch events. So I think managing those sorts of things has been tricky. But in terms of curriculum, I think we kept that going. But certainly the extracurricular stuff, so the before clubs, the after school clubs, all of those sorts of things had to go, which was a shame. And actually in the last two terms, we started to do those activities again. And we're realising how busy it is normally in a normal term where we're going to different events, umpteen different events in a week. But that's back up and running now, which is really nice. But yeah, certainly we had to lose a lot of our extracurricular stuff, which is what we enjoy doing and the kids like doing.
And in the future, should anything, God forbid, but if anything arises in the future, do you feel that you're better equipped to deal with them?
I think so. I think we've got now plans that we can just sort of spring into place. We've got things set up and infrastructure set up that we could quickly reintroduce, and I think parents are very aware of those as well. So in terms of the staggered start, some of those sorts of things, like online learning, we're certainly in a position where we're much better off than we were originally.
And would you like to share any stories about your pandemic experience within the school, sort of perhaps positive ones? Or
yeah, I mean, there were positive ones. Having conversations with parents, me personally, when I rang them sort of once or twice a week, was nice because you don't have the opportunity to chat with parents very often. So actually it was quite nice to share that camaraderie time. And they were often asking if I knew any more information, which of course I didn't. And there was one family who said that their little girl, they were working all the time, back-to-back Zoom meetings, and their little girl was doing her homeschooling on FaceTime with her grandma in South Africa. So they were doing their learning via South Africa on this iPad. That made you think, actually, children are very resilient. They sort of just get on with it. She knew that she couldn't ask her parents, but she was able to access something else. And there were lots of high points, in terms of everybody in it together. Parents were really supportive in terms of dropping off goodie bags and thank you cards and all those sorts of things. We did staff videos and various things. So that was nice. It was nice to be there. And it was actually lovely to stop the pace of life a little bit, in terms of taking a step back and thinking what is good and what's not good, what are the things that we do that actually we don't need to do anymore. And I think that in terms of the activities that we do, we have stripped some of those things back, which has been a good thing to do. And teachers, I think, felt, because we weren't going off Maypole dancing and we weren't going off to the cathedral for an event and we weren't going to the Lido for swimming lessons, that actually they were able to do quality teaching more consistently than having to dip in and out throughout the week to different events. So they were getting through a lot of their learning and a lot of their teaching because they had clear days to just teach their children, which was maybe a good point. And it made us think, what do we want to keep and what do we not want to do in future?
So, like, finally, is there any aspect of the pandemic that you feel is positive?
Just those things that I said. It just made us review things a little bit more, made us think, are all the things we're doing valid? Or do they have merit? Do they benefit the children? And if they don't, why are we doing them? And also just to sort of get those systems set up. So some of our teachers are still using the online learning that we used during the pandemic to do homework or to set tasks or have those links with families via that setup portal. And some of the things that, in terms of parent meetings, we had the first face-to-face parent meeting this term, but the other two terms, I think even with the pandemic, I'd still keep online because you can get through a lot more parents. The third and final one is where they look through books, which you can't do via remote, but you know, we might keep that in place. So I wouldn't want to go through it again. There aren't that many positives, but there are certainly a couple of things that made us reflect and think, could we do things differently?
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.